Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health with Corinne Fornari, clinical nutritionist and physician assistant, and my co-host, Carol Peterson, pharmacist. Every week, we present you with new and creative ways to help you make sense of health information and bring it home to you and your family. With years of clinical experience between us and research into traditional and cutting-edge technologies, we give you practical information to help you take charge of your health.
Still dead. Still dead.
Your life.
Hello?
Good afternoon, Corinne and Carol. You're live on the air.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Kathy. And let me turn this off and welcome back. Welcome back. This is Take Charge of Your Health. We've got an interesting show today, very interesting. But I want Carol?
We can't get our guest, and I think it would be better if we just do a different show today and bring him back maybe next week. Can't raise him.
Okay. Well, you know what? Maybe. Well, I want to start out with something very important.
Okay.
Welcome, Carol. This is always fun. I want to start out with something very important in that I made a mistake last week. And I want to tell the person, and I don't remember his name, who called in and corrected me that he was right. And the mistake I made was that there have been vegans. I knew there were vegetarians, but I didn't know that there were vegans, and they have been here for centuries and centuries. That was my mistake, because I was not aware that there had ever been a vegan sect or group before the 1800s or 1900s, that is. So I wanted to correct that, and that's important to me. But I would like in the future, Carol, what do you think? Boy, are we going to... We're going to kick up some sacred cow. I would love to do a show discussing vegan, vegetarian, and other types of diets, and the strengths and weaknesses of each. And what do you think, Carol?
Oh, that's a whole course. And in fact, for today... For today, I just listened to a podcast by Ben Bickman. Do you remember?
He's wonderful. Yes.
So I made notes. So I would like to maybe share what I heard from him on this podcast I listened to this morning, because I thought it was great. And it sort of does play into what you just said. I wanted to add a couple more things, because I was also looking into the vegan and vegetarianism.
All week long.
Me too. One point that was made was that a vegan or vegetarian has to eat a lot more food.
Now, about 40%, they said about 40% more.
Yeah, which is tremendous. I remember a couple I knew very well who were vegetarian, and we'd be at conferences, and everybody would take a plate of food, and theirs was stacked about 12 inches high, and they would go back for more. So that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
And last night, interesting enough, I listened to a presentation by a dentist, and they were in the AOSH group, which is dental and medical. And one of the things she repeated twice was that in her practice, her observation, vegetarians and vegans did not have good dental health.
Huh.
Whoa.
Would that be not dental health in terms of their gums, but dental health in terms of their teeth?
Right, their teeth.
So they weren't quite strong.
But no, let me also, teeth and gums.
Okay. No, I was not aware of that.
So I just happened to hear this last night. So I, you know, of course, because we were looking at all this, so I make a mental note about this going on. So let's go over to Ben Bickman. And we have talked a lot about insulin sensitivity on this show. In fact, we keep coming back to it over and over again with different ways, with metabolic syndrome and hormone issues and high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease. And we're always coming to the issue of insulin resistance. So I'd like to define it how Ben Bickman defined it.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Yeah, well, he said there's insulin sensitivity has two parts. One is the cell. The cell itself has lost its sensitivity to insulin and is not responding. And the other part of this definition is that insulin appears in higher than normal levels in your bloodstream. It's called hyperinsulinemia. And this occurs, he says, we keep treating diseases like there's a glucose insensitivity that we follow glucose all the time. But long before glucose gets abnormal, we are already abnormal with insulin resistance.
And he said, yes, it's our first marker. So you can be checking glucose continuously, and it's fine, it's fine. But then it's like looking behind the door. It's like going into a house and it's all clean, and you open the closets and all the junk falls out on you.
Have you been at my house?
and that has to do with the insulin. The insulin is the first marker that would show that there's an imbalance. And even before glucose rises, you can be having symptoms that go into hypertension, cardiovascular disease, obesity, fatigue, all of those could be happening all before the glucose rises. So we really have to ask. I have a patient that just recently came to me, has been diabetic for at least 10, 12 years, and never had his insulin tested.
You're kidding. Never once?
Never. Never, never, never that he's aware of. And he's got lists of his tests, although not every single one of them. But he's not aware of ever being tested for insulin levels. And so they keep on giving him more and more insulin to control his blood sugar, which isn't well controlled. And yet they've never looked at the insulin level. And
that's what they're doing. And Ben Bickman said, that's absolutely the worst thing you can do, because giving somebody who is got high insulin levels, and there are situations where it come down a little, but they're still higher than normal in a diabetic person, actually creates so much more damage. You become even more hyperinsulin because you haven't address the cell sensitivity. So this insulin thing is always going to be a problem when it's running high. So if you're going to see your doctor, you really should ask for a fasting insulin. It's got to be fasting. Mm-hmm. You could do more testing, like a glucose tolerance test, where you look at both glucose and insulin over time after a challenge.
So, now, most tests only in the glucose tolerance, it's a standard one. A standard glucose tolerance is 3 hours, mm-hmm. which isn't enough time. And it's only glucose with no insulin. If you're going in for a glucose tolerance test, the best thing to do is request a 5 hour. Simultaneously, you take glucose and insulin, glucose and insulin, glucose and insulin. So you're comparing the rise and the balance as you're watching the glucose, because your body will change. It'll start to metabolize, but you, at that same time, you want to see where the insulin is at in relationship to the glucose. And this is an important test to take, and particularly if you're somewhat sensitive. But this is what I'm going to do, Carol, because we're winging it with the show. Mm-hmm. I want to ask the audience to come in and tell us what they've experienced. I know many of you have experienced this. And the number to call is 212-209-2877. That's 212-209-2877. Give us a call. Ask us questions or tell us about what you have experienced in your health, in your body, but also in your medical care. And we will discuss it with you. Don't wait till it's too late. We usually get about 3 or 4 calls 10 minutes before we're ready to go off the air, and we never have time to really get to them and answer them in full. So call now and tell us about you or ask us questions. Go on, Carol. What else did Dr. Bickman say? Carol? Oh, my goodness. Okay. Well, I can talk about Dr. Bickman because I've just recently been reviewing his work. And he explains in such a beautiful way. Carol?
I should be on. Can you hear me?
I can hear you now.
Oh, good. I wonder what happened. So he said to think about insulin, you should consider the hormone. It's more than just a managing glucose. He likes to think of it as an energy storage or an energy allotment kind of hormone, that it can help your cell use energy, store energy, or even waste energy. And in fact, there's transporters for glucose. They're called glute something, glute 4 or something like that, I forget, that actually will take glucose into your cells without even needing insulin. So there's a kind of issue going on here, because there's states, he said puberty and pregnancy are states when you are higher in insulin. And then not all cells in your body are resistant to insulin. You can have some cells that are resistant and some cells are not. So he picked this piece, like your muscle cells could be resistant to insulin, and your ovarian fecal cells aren't. They're not resistant. They're actually quite sensitive. And so when you get this huge amount of insulin pouring in, it's very sensitive, and it has the ability to block production of estradiol, which in turn causes disturbances in your menstrual cycle, and which in turn looks like PCOS, because ovulation is not signaled properly with the estradiol. So, oh my goodness.
It goes on. We can talk more about it, because insulin, first of all, cause in an older population, in all populations, can cause inflammation in the inner veins and arteries. But insulin is a hormone regulator. High insulin can bring up testosterone, so, and block the ability to convert it to estrogen. So you end up, women end up with elevated testosterone, and that's not being balanced by estrogens, and that can be that is PCOS, elevated testosterone, because that aromatase enzyme is being blocked. But in males, it can mean that aromatase enzyme is being blocked, so their testosterone can be inflaming their prostate. So what we're looking at is insulin is a balancer, and it balances all our hormones. But in pregnancy, it does, well, in at all times, it does more than just deal with glucose. It deals with protein also. The ability to get protein into the cells to build new cells and build strength in cells is very directly related to insulin. So there are some cells in pregnancy you want very sensitive to insulin, because you have this tremendous growth and you need that protein being directed into the cells. But you don't want insulin surging and attacking your veins and arteries, and so restricting circulation to the fetus. So nature has it really beautifully figured out. It's amazing. Carol?
We've got two callers holding. Let's have a caller.
Hi, you're live on BAI. I'm so glad you called.
Can you hear me okay?
Your question and your name and your question. Hello?
Can you hear me okay?
I'm sorry, I hear a voice, but I can't hear you.
Here's my question.
Hi.
First, I'd like to thank you guys for having a really good discussion of this. It's so important. My background, I work in medicine, nuclear medicine technologist. So here's the thing. Could you please go over the role of vanadium sulfate and also chromium picolinate in mediating blood sugar? Besides those two things, I would ask you, what do you suggest people do about understanding the different kinds of diabetes that exists, to clarify so that people would figure out what kind they are, whether they are insulin-resistant diabetic person or they are a person that's insufficiently making enough insulin? I know this is a lot, but you've got such a good handle on this. I'd love to hear your response.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Now, that's big. That's very big. Now, vanadium sulfate, chromium, and berberine also. And there might be others that I, oh, and cinnamon. But chromium and vanadium, I know to some degree how they work. Maybe Carol will jump in and help me on that. They work very similarly to metformin. As a matter of fact, for a long time, I don't know recently because I haven't looked it up, but for a long time, if you looked up chromium and you looked up metformin is a drug that balances blood sugar, it was like reading the same sentences. They were working exactly in the same way to lower blood sugar. And So it makes the cells more sensitive to the insulin. It sensitizes them. So it's easier for the blood sugar to enter and be utilized. And
the other part of his question was we should talk about the different kinds of diabetes. And so we have type 1, and this means that the beta cells in the pancreas do not produce insulin properly. So this is a low insulin state, and we're not really addressing it today.
And that usually is autoimmune. It's created by some inflammatory response. It can come on very young, mostly it is, but it's an inflammatory response which attacks the beta cells. Go on, Carol.
Okay, so type 2 has plenty of beta cells, has plenty of pancreatic function, and as the disease progresses, more and more insulin is secreted by the beta cells because the regular cells, the muscles, and each and every cell in your body is not responding properly to taking up glucose. And then we have what's now called type 3, which is, they're calling Alzheimer's an insulin-resistant disease, and some call it type 3. And they used to think, in textbooks 20 years ago, they didn't think insulin even got into the brain, but that was wrong. It indeed does get in the brain, and low insulin or insulin sensitivity is tied into early dementia and Alzheimer's. And we really are having an epidemic of these things occurring more and more. Should we pick up our other caller?
Yes, I hope we answered you adequately. And you can always call back. Thank you so much. And hi, you're live on BAI. Hello?
Hello, how are you?
Are you there?
Hello? Yes, hello?
Your name?
Can you hear
you're
me?
Going to, I hear a voice, but you're going to need to speak way up.
Okay, hello, this is Mike. I'm calling from New Jersey.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, Mike.
How are you? Great show, by the way.
Thank you.
Thanks.
So, I had a question. I did have my glucose and insulin test over a year and a half ago. Actress through Dr. Ali. So my sugar was fine. I'm sorry. My sugar level was fine, but my insulin, they said, was like 400.
Whoa.
Now, so they were going to check it again in about a year.
Ideally, you like it below 10.
Yeah. I thought 6 is an ideal.
That's really way below 10, which is perfect.
Was this test taken shortly after you've eaten?
I think I fasted that day, because, like I said, it was a year and a half ago. It was about 3 hours. Okay.
When I get a reading like that, I repeat it. Okay. Because that is so off that... that I want to make sure that the lab was correct. Labs can make mistakes also. And with such a high insulin level, I want to know that that it was correct. And I wouldn't wait a year to find that out. I would do it again as soon as possible. And you get a fasting blood sugar and a... and an insulin level, and a hemoglobin A1C also, for sure.
Right.
And then have those taken, and then let's see. Because it might be an anomaly, and it might be a mistake. And so we want to know for sure. If it's not a mistake, we want to act on it. What did Dr. Ali say? Yeah, Dr. Ali is brilliant. And guess what?
He is.
He was the first person to explain to me the need for drawing insulin with every blood test.
Right.
So well, so what did Dr. Ali say?
Well, I went through the regimen. They say, you know, cut out red meat, you know, go on a more vegetarian diet. I've been doing all that. So I went to test it again, and last August was a year. And then his partner said, well, we could test again in a little while sooner, like coming up this year. I wanted to test it right away just to see if it is anomaly or if it actually is that number. But the other question was, could that have, my prostate's a little swollen. Could that affect the prostate, that being high?
Yes.
Yes,
it can. It definitely can because it's converting the testosterone more into, it's blocking the ability for the testosterone to convert, and so the testosterone is converting into a higher inflammatory level of testosterone, the DHT. So that would be something that I would do, is I would look at my testosterone level also and my DHT level, and I'd look at my free and total testosterone. But I also would get on, and Dr. Ali knows all this, so you got to communicate with him. I would definitely, very important. I would definitely get on some powerful herbs. How old to shrink your prostate before there are any problems? And I'm not connected to this company in any way, but there are a few things that I would recommend. Is I love healthy prostate, healthy ovary, and it's by Allergy Research, and it's got crinum in it. It's a special herb from Vietnam that used to be saved only for those, the emperors. They were the only one that could use this herb, and they would gather this herb up and save it for the emperor and his court. And I've had lovely success with that, and I would add another formula. I would add two formulas, one with a good strong salt palmetto, and what is it, Nigeria's Africanus? Do you know that one?
No, I don't know that one.
It's not that uncommon.
Oh, he recommended I've taken Metagenics called Prostenogic. I can't pronounce the name.
Yeah,
it's by Metagenics. It's got soft palmetto and
Nigeria Africanus. I think so. Metagenics is a very good company, and if they put something together, it's generally, again, I do not work for them, generally very high quality, and so I trust them. There's some companies I trust and some I don't, and I trust them.
And what's the name of the first one that you said that was
healthy prostate, healthy ovary with crinum.
They did test my testosterone was low too, but then so I went for the injection.
What a surprise!
Testosterone can be used in diabetics to help normalize blood glucose. But I wanted to make a point here before we go too far and I lose it. Years ago, there was a huge study. And because we have glucose meters and we can test all the time, and we have continuous glucose meters, you can wear one all the time, so you see the impact on your blood glucose of everything you eat and whatever exercise you have. And this study wanted to demonstrate how good a therapy tight glucose control is. And what they actually found, they had to stop the study because people were worse off. Insulin continued to get larger. The insulin numbers got larger in spite of tight glucose control. So Dr. Ben Bickman, we should insert here too, like exactly who he is. He's a PhD, he's not an MD, and his focus of study has been the hormone insulin. And he said it's a disadvantage and an advantage because he doesn't treat people clinically, but he said, I get paid to be curious as a PhD. He said, doctors don't get paid to be curious.
No, they don't have time to be either. And he's a professor at Brigham Young University in the medical school. So yeah. The guy's brilliant. He's been on the radio before. So thank you so much for your call. Do follow up on this. And if you would like, call us back and tell us what you found. Are there any others on the line, Carol?
Yeah, we have a new caller waiting.
Hi. You're live on BAI. Your name, please.
Daryl McPherson, Bronx, New York.
You need to speak up.
Daryl McPherson, Bronx, New York.
Somehow you need to speak up, please.
I'm speaking up. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly now. Thank you.
That's all right. When the listeners come up with about $40,000, we can get another phone system that actually works to connect you all more clearly. So let's get out of the pocket, folks, so that we can hear these folks. What I'd like to discuss is there any website that you can do comparison on the products that you all talk about, the companies, because most of the companies that have quality products, hardly anybody I know has ever heard of. And so, for instance, you gave two today. The gentleman gave one that I was sort of familiar with. However, we hear take this, take that. And then, like you said, there are some products that are of quality, and there are some products that aren't quality. So I was thinking that if there isn't a place where we could go to do that work, I'd like to raise enough money to do two things. One, have quality labs or have labs check for their quality so that when a person goes in for a test, that the test is actually valid. And two, if a place to evaluate, especially because they're more and more companies are coming out with proprietary blends. How do you know?
Well,
I mean, you all know because you tested out on
okay.
people, but
the well, we'll answer person. That question right now. Carol, you want to start this?
Well, I don't know of any such thing, and it would be absolutely lovely. One company that I am associated with, Master Supplements, they actually put a QR code on their bottle, and they do probiotics. So with the QR code, you can scan and see what the test results on your particular batch of probiotics. And I think that's a great step forward. But the other thing is, so they have lovely products and they have several variations of bacteria. So how do we know, where's the proof that this has been put together and does what you want exactly? We're kind of backwards. We do some study about the effectiveness of a particular herb or mineral, and then we devise nutrient supplements around that. And then we don't really show that if you take this product, you're going to get the results you want. Although yesterday I listened to a a program and a supplement company was introducing a new product. And so they had an established endpoint. They had particular ingredients they put in their product, tested four patients over, I think it was probably over several months, I'll say 6 months. And the test was, I think it was around quality of sleep. So they did this by questionnaire and had four patients, two of them with breast cancer who were having serious sleep problems. So they chose the kind of person that actually might be needing that kind of therapy, as opposed to drug companies who test healthy people and then give their drugs to unhealthy people after it's approved. So you don't have that. But we do have a huge deficit in that kind of information. We want products that will have an endpoint that we want, and we want to have some sort of idea that we're going to get to that endpoint. Just as a matter of fact, just think of all the products on the market to help people sleep. But there's different pathways and different issues with everybody's sleep problems. So you have to assess the individual and find out what's going on. But people, as they're looking for a product to use, it's N of one studies and it's perfectly scientific. I'll try this. Does it work? No, it doesn't work. Go on to the next one.
It doesn't work for you.
N of one, right. And it's absolutely scientifically sound. Yep.
So it becomes very difficult, and it becomes difficult for us as practitioners also. What I have found is that there is no comparison written up that can work for you. What we do as practitioners is I work with companies that I trust, and then I test their products. Now, that's easy for me to say because I'm dealing with multiple people. It's very difficult for an individual because we're in a Wild West industry right now that really has very little comparisons. And so it's difficult, and I understand your frustration, but at the same time, I see the quality of so many of the products that I work with. It surprises me. There's one way to also look at, one thing to also look at, and that is, there's a lot of people say, EPA, and it does this, and it does that, and this does this. And you look at the product, and that's not the EPA that the studies were made off of. So there's a discrepancy. But all EPAs are not the same. All vitamin A's are not the same. They're not the same. They have different absorbability. They have different quality in going into the supplement. They have different cofactors that go into the product, surfactants that allow it to flow. It's all different. So that's why I deal with very specific companies. And in good health food stores, very good ones, I can find the companies that I mentioned. So you might want to find the best and biggest. Now, Whole Foods doesn't have very many varieties. They have their variety and no others. So you might want to broaden your search broader than Whole Foods. Are there any more, Carol?
No, not at this point, but I have a very important issue to bring up, and it's what causes high insulin in the first place?
Okay.
Dr. Bickman says there's three things. One is cortisol in the catecholamines, and that would be adrenaline, noradrenaline.
So that would be stress.
Right, and including drugs, prednisone.
Go on.
Including sleep deprivation. If you didn't sleep very well, by the next morning, if you measured your insulin, it would be too high.
Mm-hmm.
Inflammation causes insulin resistance immediately. And then hyperinsulinemia itself causes more hyperinsulinemia. And then there's a secondary cause, which things people are not really aware of, and it's too much linoleic acid. And this is the most commonly eaten fat that we have right now. It's in soy, corn. We've been talking about PUFAs, polyunsaturated. And this is one of it. And it makes the fat cells insulin resistant. But that was so fascinating. So we need a really big shift in our oils. We need an oil change.
And well, we've discussed this many times. We used to discuss it a lot to the point where we thought everybody got it, that these oils are so inflammatory. And that what happens is that, so it's covering two areas. One, it enters into the cell and it blocks the entrance of insulin, but two, it's so inflammatory and your body really takes it in easily, but can't metabolize it. So looking at that from both directions can really act to raise your insulin level. And anything else, Carol?
Yes. So what do you do about it?
Oh, well, you change your oils.
Well, you change your oils.
And you get sleep. One of the things
He says sleep deprivation is a stressor, will create high insulin, but conversely, getting sleep doesn't fix it, which is very odd. He said there's studies for that. It's not, it helps to get rid of the stressors in general. So he's saying eat low carb.
Mm-hmm.
And he said they've tried looking at low carb diets and low fat diets, and they actually find hands down the low carb diets win every time. Now, he said there are groups that have eaten higher carbs and not become insulin resistant, but they are the ones that tend to eat the starchy tubers and have culturally they've been doing that for years. We have a problem with there's too many fast foods and sugars and simple starches that make us very prone to having insulin resistance. Now, exercise can be helpful. It will bring your blood sugar down and less demand on your insulin, which is what you want. And he's saying particularly resistance exercise. And then when you do your exercise, work your muscles to at least you feel burning or to exhaustion. To be the most effective. But then secondarily, he said, the absolute worst thing you can do is after your exercise session, have a smoothie or a Gatorade with all the sugar in Gatorade. You have just now negated everything you exercise for. So then there's the intermittent fasting. And so he said what the most research is for a 15 to 18 hour window, but it's also desirable to switch things up, not have the same thing all the time. And he says as it gets to 18 hours, we're getting closer to one meal a day or maybe two meals a day. But he said, I've seen that there are people that fail this because what they think is they've done all this fasting, and now during that window, their eating window, they need to eat as much as they can. And again, the type of food that they're ingesting in their eating window can be too high in sugars and starches, and will just cause a whole new problem.
Well, there was one thing that you said I want to comment on. That you said before this statement, you were talking about the study with melatonin and four patients, and two of them had breast cancer.
Yeah, it wasn't melatonin. It was a combination of different herbals.
Well,
and melatonin, this company is bringing out a new product.
Melatonin has shown in high doses to slow down the spread, if not block the spread of breast cancer, and slow down, if not block, the reoccurrence of breast cancer. So I wanted to bring that up when you brought up about the four patients, two with cancer and two without, and how important it is for people who have had breast cancer and or who do have breast cancer to have high melatonin levels. And it's not only with breast cancer, it can be prostate cancer, colon cancer, pancreatic cancer. And high melatonin levels bring up your immune system. It allows you to get into a deeper sleep, which allows you to activate your natural killer cells, which brings up your natural immunity. So there was another thing that I wanted to say about insulin. Yes, you really brought it up, is that if you exercise and then you take one of these drinks, what are you doing? One, you have built up during the exercise your growth hormone, your natural growth hormone. Growth hormone and insulin are very interesting in that they're almost identical molecules, and they fight for the same receptor sites. So here you are exercising to build up your growth hormone, and you eat this high-carb or drink this high-carb drink, and what happens? You block the ability of the growth hormone to sit on the receptors and create the effect that you were exercising for. And that's also a reason why you don't want to eat high carbs before bed, because in the middle of the night you go to sleep and there's a cycle that happens. Melatonin comes out, growth hormone comes out, and then testosterone is then created. But if you eat high carbs, what you have done is you've saturated the receptor sites with insulin to absorb the carbs or sugars, and the end result is that you're not getting the benefit of the sleep in the same way, and you're not getting the growth hormone benefit in the same way. So, okay. My goodness.
I have one more thing to bring up. He also talked about keto diets, and he said long-term keto diets are not good. It's you've trained your body to burn fat over glucose. The ideal situation is that your body is metabolically flexible, that it easily goes back and forth between fat burning and glucose burning. So I thought that was a pretty good thing. I have known people doing the keto diet for long periods of time, and then it works, and then it doesn't.
Then it doesn't. And
yeah.
What you have, see, the body, the greatest strength of the body is its flexibility in every single area, in its muscles, in its joints, in its metabolism, in its arteries, that they can expand and retract and expand and retract. And so it can be very, flexibility and variability is essential for optimal health. And so when you do the same thing every day at the same time in the same way, you're reducing the variability, the flexibility that allows your body to create and adjust as you're functioning. It's an interesting, very interesting fact that people lose sight of. You know what, Carol?
We're just about through here, and that was a good note. That was a good note to finish up on, I think. Metabolic flexibility.
I think so too, and we're right at the end, and we had tremendous help from the listeners. Your questions were spot on, and they kept us focused on the subject. It was absolutely beautiful.
Thank you.
So I want to thank you for your questions. I want to thank Carol for being here, because every time we're together, I learn.
Me too.
I'm going to say one very quick thing, as fast as I can say it, is that I was thinking the other day about the low sperm count that we discussed.
Mm-hmm.
And how people are so shocked about it in 2023. And you know what, Carol?
What?
I was speaking about it on this radio show in 2004.
Yep.
About how sperm counts were precipitously dropping and the danger of it. And it was so shocking to people. They were just stunned and didn't know what to say, and I got lots of comments on it. I must be exaggerating. And now, 19 years later, it's front page news in the Post on how that's happening. So stick with us, folks. We're right out there. And we're constantly learning and growing and sharing every bit of it with you. So I want to thank you for spending this time with us. I want to thank you, Carol, for being my partner. I want to thank you, Kathy.
Kathy, thank you.
There. And we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
So we'll be back next week. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Bye.
In conclusion, I'd like to say, remember, this information is not an attempt to diagnose or a substitute for treatment. As always, we urge you to take this and all other information we share with you up with your healthcare practitioner. Clearly, this comes under the category of taking charge of your health. Thank you so much for spending this time with us, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.